Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you. Tamper with you.
Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Tam, Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to
executives in the league is
not talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Actually, what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I am not Sam Amick. I'm your fill-in host and producer, Andrew Schlecht. With me, just got one guy out on the East Coast. It's Fred Katz, covering the hottest team in the NBA suddenly. Fred, what's up?
I'm also not Sam Amick.
No.
Neither of us is Sam Amick.
No one here is Sam Amick. What's it feel like covering the hottest team in the league right now? Is that something is that a question you thought you would have to answer?
It's an extraordinary experience. I can't, you know what the best part of covering the Knicks when they have a 7-game winning streak going is? It is seeing Tom Thibodeau just utterly unchanged throughout the entire thing. Just totally unimpressed with everything going on. I mean, a reporter had the gall to ask him after their 7th consecutive win, "You guys now have the longest winning streak in the NBA. How do you feel about it? Is that something you care about?" And he just goes, no.
It's amazing. He's got long view in mind, Fred.
Yeah, I don't really know what the long view is, you know. He said winning streaks don't mean anything the other day. Like, it's only doesn't mean anything when you get to tomorrow. Winning streaks don't mean anything until you get to tomorrow. And you know what? I guess that's why he's more successful than I am. But yeah. I'm a big rest on your laurels guy. So
yeah. It's ridiculous. Okay.
It's great. It's great to see him become like full Tibbs, you know, like you see hints of Tibbs every once in a while, but seeing full Tibbs during a 7-game winning streak, and they're playing so well. So it's enjoyable to see the full Tibbs experience.
We're going to talk more about them here shortly, but first we're going to start with a little game. We've kind of put this on the shelf. We had this idea a few weeks ago, and it feels like a good time to put out this game, the net rating game. So what we're going to do is I'm going to tell you a net rating of a team. Then I want you to tell me if we feel like it fits how they've played this year and who this team is. So we're going to kind of bounce around a little bit. I thought about going in a random order just to keep it fun. We're going to start with a team that I feel like you have a lot to say about, and a team that is, I don't know if they're confusing. Maybe they shouldn't be confusing. Maybe they're just bad. It's the Washington Wizards, who have the 25th best net rating, -3.1. This is a team that they have talent. They were a team that wanted to fight for a play-in or a playoff position, and they're the opposite of the Knicks. They're the coldest team in the league. What do we do with this team, Fred?
Not surprising. I mean, maybe surprising they're this far down, but like,
they're the same record as the Magic. At this point in the season, that's a little surprising.
The Magic are the other hottest team in the league, although they're playing right now against Atlanta. So we're recording this late on Monday night, so we don't know what's going to happen in that one. So maybe they won't be by the time we're done recording this. But the Magic are on fire right now. They're playing great basketball. Moncaro looks amazing. Franz Wagner is going to be awesome. But yeah, Wizards. I mean, look, they've had some injuries. Beal had been out for a while. He just came back, and then they dropped one to the Lakers, and a close one to the Lakers when Beal came back. But man, they just look, they are discombobulated, and they're 11-20, and they're just in a situation where you're like, what is going to happen with them. Because when you list out, like, if you rank situation 1 through 30, just like best situation is we have an awesome team now, and we'll have an awesome team tomorrow, and we have all of our draft picks, and you can win the title this year, you can win the title next year, you can win the title the year after that, you know, the Boston Celtics or Milwaukee or whatever, whoever you want to choose.
Yeah.
And then you get down to the bottom of the list, it's like the Wizards are real close to the bottom, right? I mean, when we're talking about the fact that they don't necessarily have a clean cap sheet moving forward because you got that big Beal contract on the books. They yeah. don't have a budding star in one of their young guys. You know, I like Corey Kispert. I think he's going to be a good player, but he's not a star. Denny Avdija, I think he's going to be a good player, but he's not a star. Rui is a free agent after this year, and I think he kind of is what he is at this point. So it's they don't, you know, Johnny Davis is non-existent, and we can talk about yeah. Johnny Davis, which is a wild situation that he's just not there with them. He's been with the G League the whole time after going 10. They're real far at the bottom. They don't control their own draft picks, their own draft history moving forward. They have a protected pick that's protected all the way to 2026 going to the Knicks. I mean, they do not have a desirable situation right now. And I think, you know, Zach Lowe and Bob Marks were talking about them on their podcast as an interesting team to follow leading into February's trade deadline. I'm notoriously intrigued by the Wizards more than the average yeah. human being. The covering them for years will do that to you. But I agree with Bobby. I think it's incredibly interesting. You got Porzingis, player option next year. Kuzma, player option, which there's no way he's picking that up. And he's given quotes to Ava Wallace of the Washington Post talking about how he, is not going to be picking up the player option. He's going to test free agency, which is not surprising. He's going to get paid a lot, but just the timing of it is weird. And they could try to trade Kuzma. They could try to trade Porzingis. They could try to re-sign those guys. Like, they have a bunch of different options. And what direction they choose is going to be real interesting.
Is it going to be interesting? Because what they've continued to do is like, no, this is it. This is the direction. Here's the way we're going to go. You know, we'll give Porzingis a massive extension, or we'll re-sign him to something big. We'll just run it back. And they just make little, you know, moves here on the margins. Beal seems content with where he's at. He's got a massive deal. Doesn't seem to want out.
And a no-trade clause, by the way.
And that would be the one. Like, that would be the way that you would have to do it if you're the Wizards, is just pull the plug. Like, this isn't working. But instead, like, they made the move to get Monty Morris and Will Barton in over the summer. You know, they continue to make, like, these moves that really just don't move the needle at all. And then they pick somebody in the draft that doesn't end up impacting them all that much. And they kind of just continue down this road. Like, and with Beal, with the deal that he has, it's like, how, I guess this, they might just be the Wizards. I mean, I think that them and the Bulls might be like the most, like in the next 3 years, the two teams are like, man, I really would not want to have to deal with that situation as a front office. It's like everybody yeah. else, either you have like draft picks coming in, or you're like young and developing, or you're actually competing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's probably them and the Bulls. I mean, look, it comes down to the most important person in any organization, which is ownership, which is Ted Leonsis yeah. has said publicly, quote, we will never, ever tank. And this yep. is kind of what that mentality gets you, right? They're yep. they're reshuffling deck chairs every year. And if that's going to be the case, you have to nail at least one of your draft picks. And they haven't had any, until Johnny Davis, they hadn't had any huge misses on their draft picks. But they haven't absolutely nailed. They have an A-plus pick. And when you're picking 9 to 15, which is where they are in all of these drafts, if that's the position you're going to put yourself in, you have to nail them. And they haven't done that. The Johnny Davis thing to me is, you know, it's a crazy what if? Like, just a crazy what if? Well, crazy by my standards. I feel like I feel like the fact that we opened it up by being like, yeah, the most famous guy on this podcast is not podcasting today. And also Fred's going to talk about the Wizards the whole time. I feel like we only have like six listeners left. So
it's okay. It's okay.
So it's a, if you're still listening to this for some insane reason, then you might also think this is a crazy what if. This is a what if that I have thought about so much because it involves all three teams that I've been on the beat of. So I covered the Thunder, I covered the Wizards, I covered the Knicks now. On draft day, the Knicks make a trade with the Thunder, in which they get pretty widely panned for, the Knicks do, where they trade the number 11 pick to the Thunder for three future first round picks. The Wizards pick 10th in that draft, right? They end up taking Johnny Davis at number 10. The next pick is the Knicks, and they end up making that trade with the Thunder. If the Thunder are willing to do that trade with the Knicks, surely they called the Wizards before to see if the Wizards would do that trade at number 10. If you're willing to do that trade for number 11, you're willing to do it for number 10. From everything that I've gathered, and Johnny Davis, meanwhile, like, the Wizards are just clearly not in on him. Like, that's what's weird. It's not weird that he hasn't been good. It's weird that they took a guy 10 and, like, they just had a stretch where they had, like, eight guys. No one was healthy. And Johnny Davis was just on healthy G League assignment the whole time because they just don't have him with their NBA team because they feel like he's that far away.
And they need guards. Like, I mean, all shouts out to Jordan Goodwin, but they need guards.
Jordan Goodwin's like the one bright spot for them amongst the young guys. Kispert's been good, but Jordan Goodwin is like, you know, exciting two-way find. He's good. But with Johnny Davis, what's crazy, I think, is like, I don't think the Wizards were like, you know, when they drafted Denny Avdia, they were really excited about that pick. That was a pick with enthusiasm. He was like top five on their draft board. He falls to nine. They take him. Same sort of vibe with Rui Hachimura. Same sort of vibe at 15 with Corey Kispert. I heard leading up to the draft the whole time, the Wizards love Kispert. The Wizards love Kispert. And then they take Kispert at 15. It's like, okay, yeah. I mean, all I heard was how much the Wizards love Kispert. So, sure, makes sense. I don't think Johnny Davis was like the guy who they were thirsting for the whole time. I think he was there at 10. They took him at 10. And it's an incredible what if to think, okay, what if the Thunder go to the Wizards and say, we'll give you those three first round picks. And the Wizards say, yeah, you know what? We didn't have a guy who we were in love with who fell to us. Let's do it. Because not only is now all of a sudden the Johnny Davis pick not there, and maybe they get killed in that scenario too for not picking when they're in the situation that they're in. But not only does the Johnny Davis pick not happen for them in that scenario, also the Wizards get three first-round picks. The three first-round picks the Thunder sent out in that deal were Milwaukee's in 2025, it's protected. Okay, fine. Detroit's very heavily 2023 first round pick that's protected for years to come. Okay, fine. I think it can't be better than the ninth pick like 4 years from now. And also the Wizards 2023 pick, they would have gotten their pick back, which would mean so much for their future because that way, if they want to go out, they want to make a trade this upcoming summer or last summer, they wanted to get in on the Donovan Mitchell stuff, but they couldn't because they were only able to trade one first round pick because that pick is protected out to 2026. If they own it, if they own their own, they could have offered up the house for Donovan Mitchell. Who knows? You have all your picks. You're in the game. If you really want to be, you're in the game for somebody else. If some other big star becomes available, and now they got to deal with the fact that they don't have their pick. They can only trade one future first round pick in a deal because of that. Like it just, there's so many other dominoes that fall if the Wizards just do that. And to be clear, I'm not like knocking them for not doing that because this is some serious like hindsight being 90-20.
You might be the only 20-20. One what if-ing this. Yeah.
but there are crazy ripple effects for that one. There are crazy ripple effects for that one. It's just like a thing that I've thought about a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice deal for anybody out there. And the Thunder really wanted to do that deal too. Like they wanted, not only did they want Jalen Williams out of Santa Clara, which I think they would have probably taken him at 12 anyways, if they had the choice of both.
They took him twice.
They really wanted both. They really wanted to pick twice. They really wanted to pick three times in the lottery. You know, they really liked that draft. And so,
Andrew, they wanted to pick Jalen Williams twice.
They did that too. they wanted to pick a lot in this draft, and they ended up picking. They love Jalen Williams so much that they said, "Let's just do it again. Just can we do that again? That was fun. Let's do that again." And he's been awesome for them. He's been great for the Thunder. But yeah, that is a wild one. I have like zero faith in this Wizards team, like getting it together. And I don't even know what getting it together would look like. Because on the surface, you look at the players they have, and it's like, man, Porzingis has had a nice year. Like, he's played really well. And Beal, when he's actually been in the lineup, has played pretty well. And Kyle Kuzma is having a really nice year. And even Corey Kispert. Like, Kispert's played really well, shooting 41% from three. Like, he's a nice player. But, like, what do they lack? Like, what does this team, if they want to continue down this road, like, really what they need is a point guard. And, like, trying to get a point guard. Like, they got Monty Morris, who's really just one of the best backups in the league, and that's what he is. I mean, that to me is kind of the struggle. So,
I think they're ranked 25th.
I think they are the 25th. Yeah. What?
You know what's crazy about it all? Their starters are, like, one of the best starting units in the league. Like, their starters are, like, plus 13 per 100 possessions.
Yeah.
Their starters are playing well together. But they fall off with every other combination.
They're all guys in their prime. They should play well together, you know? Like, this should be it.
Yep, and it's not. I mean, I wonder if they just go to, like... I mean, you mentioned they're tied with the Magic. I think if the season ends today, they have the 6th best lottery odds. It is not too late for them to turn around and just do, like, a one-year thing. But I don't know what that would mean for Bradley Beal's desire to want to be there. And they want Beal to stay. Like I said, like, ownership wants Beal to stay. Oh. Ownership never wanted him out. They always wanted him sticking. Like, I don't know what that would mean. But if you get to a point where it's like, if it's an accidental tank, you might as well make it an intentional one. And then we'll see. You know, I think you can get something for Kuzma if you choose to trade him. Kuzma's good.
Yeah.
He's a good player. I think you can get something real for him. I think they're less likely to trade Porzingis. I think they want him to be part of their future.
Yeah. I mean, upset Beal. What is he really excited for them to pick 9th again? They picked 9th like 100 times while Beal's been on this team.
Right.
You know? Like, if they pick 4th, I'm really upset about it. Now they actually might get a good player. I don't know. That to me is crazy. Let's move on to the next team. The Philadelphia 76ers have the 7th best net rating. Do we think that fits who this team is? They're a plus 3.6. Do you think that's accurate for who the Sixers team is? They've kind of had a roller coaster season, but have leveled out and played really good basketball as of recent. But what are your thoughts on the Sixers?
Yeah, they've played well. I mean, I still want to see it when they have all of their guys there, like when Maxey's back, and then see Maxey and Harden and Embiid, right? Because there were, I don't know, what's the way to put it? It just didn't look right when they were all together, right? And Harden has kind of been better with his cadence, and I think figured out some pick and roll stuff with Embiid, which wasn't all the way there. But, you know, Harden is, for all the stuff of James Harden's back that people were saying early in the year, it's like his efficiency is lower than it's ever been. And he's not getting to the rim really anymore. And so he's not creating his own shot like he used to. I'm not saying he's not capable of creating his own shot. It's just that he literally used to be the best in the world at creating his own shot, and he's not that anymore. And I think you can make a good argument that Maxey is superior in that faction. So, like, okay, how are those two guys going to mesh off of each other is a really big question for me on whether this team can reach the ceiling that its talent level should have it at. But I don't know. What do you say?
I mean, it's all about Joel. And you mentioned Harden. His passing is still really impacting the Sixers in a positive way, and especially their corner three-point shooters. Like, they've been shooting the ball really well, and teams have been shooting really poorly from three against the Sixers, which has really helped them this season. But I like the moves that they made. Like, D'Anthony Melton's been pretty awesome for them this year. Even Shake Milton was not a move, but he's been on the roster, but he's played really well off the bench. But to me, it's just all about Joel Embiid. I mean, they're playing against the Raptors right now as we speak, and he's 28, 11, and 4. he puts up crazy stats every night. And that's with him shooting 6 of 16 from the field. Like, he gets to the free throw line like crazy. He's knocking down shots from all three levels. Like, this is, I guess the question is, are they maximizing Joel Embiid? I think they're doing everything they can to try to do that. And I think that you're right. We won't really know the answer to that until they are the full squad. But to me, it's Joel, who has played like an MVP again this year. He probably won't win it, but he's played at that level once again.
Yeah, he got off to that slow start where he wasn't at the same level as he normally is the first, 10, 15 games or whatever it was. And lately, he's been insane. I feel like he drops 50 once a week. And you're right. I should have given Harden more credit as an offensive player because, even with the questions that we I think rightfully will have about just like his and Embiid's specific chemistry, it's just like, I mean, they're still just a total and complete force when those two are together. When Harden and Embiid are on the floor together, they're averaging 119 points per 100 possessions, which is insane. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, that is those two guys on the floor together, you have an offense. Now, the question is, what are you when you add Maxey to the mix? Because, I mean, this has a lot to do with the early season numbers. But when you add Maxey to the mix, that goes down to 111. And that's from when they were really struggling early in the year. And so I'm not saying Maxey comes back and all of a sudden they're going to fall off. I don't believe that to be true. I believe those numbers are going to get way better as the season goes on, and once Maxey is back and you're good, and it sounds like there's still a good amount of time. Like, he sounds like he's not recovering very quickly. Like, it sounds, Doc had some comments a few days ago about how it sounds like it's still going to be at least a few more weeks before Maxey is back. But I just want to see it. Like, this group was put together not to win a playoff series. Like, they can win a playoff series. I guess, they're seventh in net rating. It's like, that seems about right for where they should be, to where I feel like they could win a playoff series. But this group was put together to at least be a conference finalist, right? And yeah. I struggle. There's no way right now that I have them over Boston or Milwaukee for sure. And I struggle to put them over Cleveland with the way that Cleveland is playing. I think Cleveland's legit. They're just a two-way force with unbelievable rim protection and two guards who are absolutely dynamic off the dribble on the other end. And Cleveland, I think, is a really scary force. So it's like, okay, if you're the fourth best team in the East, you can maybe win a playoff series, and that's about it. But I don't think that's what the goal of this roster was coming into the year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And there's still time for them to get it together or to make a move midseason to improve their team. But they're locked in to Harden and Embiid. And if they're going to win a playoff series, if they're going to win two playoff series, it's going to be because Joel Embiid is the best player on the floor. And I still think that he could do that. Like, he still has that ceiling. He has to be healthy, though. And that's the thing that scares you the most. Because if he's playing a lot of minutes in the regular season, he just always has weird injuries. He's had a ton of weird injuries going into the playoffs. And then you know that he can just fade as the playoffs go along. So, like, that's the scariest thing. As far as, like, corner threes go, I think they're sixth in the league in corner three percentage, and they're taking a lot, which is like, that's kind of the power of James Harden. And so there's still some good stuff going on, but like, about the seventh best team in the league feels about right. Let's talk about your New York Knicks. We're ranked 10th in the league in net rating at a plus 1.8. 10th in the league feels a little rich for me. Is this all about this current run, Fred?
It's a lot about the current run. Yeah, it's also a lot about the fact that, like, there's so much parity in the league right now that, like, you're 10th with a plus 1.8 net rating. It's like you could one bad loss, all of a sudden you could be 20th in net rating. Like, you could fall to, like, minus 0.4 and you're, like, 17th or something, you know? Like, it's...
Yeah, it's true.
The middle part of the league is just so bunched up. Both conferences, by the way, is so bunched up that I think it's honestly more of just an indicator of that.
Sure.
I don't know what to make of this run. I just, because I can't recall ever seeing, you see a team's quality change all the time. You see a team be bad for a while and then they get really hot and they're good. Or a team be really good for a while and then they get cold and they're really bad. you see the Magic start 5-20 or whatever they were, and then they win 6 games in a row. Like that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, a few years ago, Miami Heat started 10-31 and finished 31-10. You know, that stuff happens. But what's so jarring about this one is the flip in their identity that changed overnight. You know, a little more than 2 weeks ago, they played the Dallas Mavericks at home, and they were up double digit on the Mavericks. And the Mavericks come back, and in the third quarter, both Tim Hardaway Jr. and Luka Doncic each individually outscored the Knicks in the third quarter. Doncic had 19. Hardaway had 19. Doncic had 17. And the Knicks had 15 in the third quarter. And they end up getting killed by Dallas. And it just felt like a something has got to change moment for the Knicks, who fell to 10-13 at the moment. The next day, they have Cleveland at home on the second day of a back-to-back. They hold Cleveland to 81 points. They play incredibly feisty defense. Tom Thibodeau changes his rotation. That's the first time Derrick Rose is out of the rotation. Miles McBride, who's this feisty second-year, former second-round pick, is in the rotation. They have not lost a game since. They were, after that Dallas game, they were 26th in points allowed per possession. Now they're 8th. Since that Dallas game, they're 1st in defense. They were terrible on the defensive boards. Now they're totally acceptable. They were totally porous defensively and the worst transition defense team in the league, arguably. And now they are scrambling back down the floor. Julius Randle was playing confounding pick and roll defense at times. Now he's switching and aggressively manning guys and has been like if you watch their, they just played 2 games in Chicago. You watch the second game in Chicago that Randle played, and Randle has been phenomenal for this entire stretch. But you watch that second game that Randle played, he only had 19 points. He didn't shoot the ball particularly well. I think he was 7-17. It was the best defensive game he's played all season. He was a total pest defensively. He was physical. He was try hard. I mean, it was the best defensive game he played all year. It's just a total identity switch. And that's why it's so confusing. Because you can see a team get really hot and really cold, and you can be like, okay, well, this is a thing that works well for them, and that makes sense. Is a team that doesn't, and that makes sense. But you just feel like you're watching two completely different teams before and after the Dallas loss. It's just very odd. I don't know what to make of it. What say you?
I mean, you stop playing Cam Reddish, Evan Fournier, and Jericho Sims, who are like the 3 worst, according to Cleaning Sims. Glass.
Sims is playing a little bit now again.
He is. Okay. But you play less of Evan Fournier, basically, and less of Cam Reddish. And then you insert Miles McBride and more Emmanuel Quickly, more Quentin Grimes. That's what's weird to me, and I wanted to ask you, like, Tibbs is a guy who obviously loves veterans, but he loves guys that play defense. Like, what was the infatuation with playing Evan Fournier so much? Because you insert these other guys that, like, play really hard, like, play really good basketball. And I saw them up close in Oklahoma City, and you see Quentin Grimes and Miles McBride, like, getting after it. You're like, oh. Like that flipped some of that game in Oklahoma City, even just inserting those guys. I think that was one of the first games that he stopped playing Evan Fournier. Or was just like, yeah, no more Evan Fournier. Like, what's going on here? That's kind of confusing to me. Like, what? Like, do you have any feel for what the deal is with that? Because he doesn't seem like a typical Tibbs guy.
He's not. He's not a typical Tibbs guy. I mean, I think it really just came down to the fact that Nick signed Evan Fournier to a really big contract. And they're a team that really doesn't, even during the win streak, like they really don't have a lot of shooting. And Fournier was the best 3-point shooter on the team. And they need that shooting. They need that spacing. Ultimately, I think it really came down to, though, the fact that Grimes began the year hurt, came back too soon, got hurt again. Came back too soon, got hurt again. And then I think Tibbs had this paranoia about re-injuring Grimes. I know Tibbs said right away that the starting spot at shooting guard was Evan Fournier's to lose.
Right.
I think it was only a matter of time before Grimes ended up starting. I think we were always getting to a place where Grimes started very soon. I think if it weren't for the injury, Grimes would have been in the starting lineup. very, very, very early in the year. That's my belief. It's totally unprovable because I don't have a time machine and I can't change the past. But that's what I believe would have happened if Grimes began the year early. Tibbs has always had a love affair with Grimes. Tibbs was pushing hard for them to draft Grimes before they actually did it. I mean, he is like the ultimate Tibbs player, right? Where he is physical, he's try hard, and he's already a really good defender on the perimeter. And by the way, he's gotten really hot from three, and now all of a sudden is up to 37% from three this year, and he's hitting step backs and attacking closeouts and is really good at kind of making passes when he, you know, passes back out to the perimeter when he does that, and just plays really good team basketball. And you're right. I mean, the guys who he put in are just dudes who will punch you in the throat. You know, they'll just, they're just physical, and they're going to play crazy hard. And Miles McBride, I don't know what he's going to end up being offensively, and if it's going to be enough to hold up his game. And he's only 6 feet, but he's got long arms and he fights so hard. And I don't know. I was watching them play the Pacers the other day, and I was like, TJ McConnell, like there's some TJ McConnell in Miles McBride. Like you see that, you know, defensively, like you see that. And so those are the kinds of guys you're playing. And you're right. When you start playing guys who just, if you can guard, you can play. If you take that mentality, then your team's going to start to guard some. And by the way, Jalen Brunson has been just so solid.
Oh, phenomenal. Yeah. He's been great this year. Do you buy them as a sixth seed though? And this is kind of where their net rating puts them, like six in the East, firmly in the playoffs. Like I kind of don't buy them. Even the Heat have had a weird, weird season. I still kind of think the Heat are going to get it together. Atlanta as well have had a really bad season, but I like what Atlanta has going for them more than the Knicks.
Well, Andrew, can we take this to the next one? Because you mentioned the Heat, and that's on our list.
Yeah.
Should we transfer this over?
20th in net rating, -1 so far this season, is the Miami Heat, who are currently in seventh. They are so lucky to only be right here. And this is part of just, like you said, like everything is just smashed together. And you can be a -1 or a +1.8, and you're within a game and a half of each other. You know, it doesn't really matter all that much to Miami, but man, the Heat, they've won four in a row. They're starting to get things back together a little bit, but it's been tough. And some of it's injury related. Some of it is like their offense is just pretty gross. I just do not like watching this Miami Heat team. But it has been a struggle. But I still, if I were to pick for a team to take that sixth slot, like I believe in everybody else that's there, Milwaukee, Boston, Cleveland, Brooklyn's been really good lately, and Philly. Like, I think I would still put Miami there at six.
Yeah, I agree, which is why I would say that I think the Knicks are probably lower than their net rating and Miami at -1. I know they're shallow. Yeah. I know they're shallow. I know what's weird about the construction of the Heat is that with their role players, they have a lot of, they're almost built like a 2013 team. Where, you know how like around that era of the NBA, everyone was like, oh, the Spurs have lots of specialists. If you have a guy who just has one great skill, go get Steve Novak and you can fit him in. Mm-hmm. And then teams started realizing, oh, in a playoff series, if you have a guy who's a specialist, then that means he's really weak in other areas. And we can just pick at those wounds over and over again until they bleed out. And then teams started going to more well-rounded role players, and you know, the Steve Novaks of the world aren't as much those sorts of guys. Miami is almost built a little bit like a 2013 team with its role players, which is weird because its stars are so well-rounded, and it makes it very obvious. They're kind of shallow. They're not deep. I just think that if Jimmy Butler can play enough, which, you know, might be the famous last words, then they will figure something out. Bam is sneakily having a fantastic season. He has been so good. He is scoring more. He's scoring efficiently. But when Jimmy is there, like, he is their engine. He is the one who makes them go. And by the way, when Jimmy plays, they're a net positive team. They're They're plus two per 100 when he plays. He is so important specifically just for their offense. You talk about how they just can't score, and they can't. It's such a slog when he's off the floor, and this has been their problem for years. For years, yeah. They have been trying to figure out ways to score without Jimmy Butler, and they've just struggled to be able to do it, and Kyle Lowry was going to be the guy who was going to save that, and sometimes he does. He's had some really big games this year, but he's just not the shot creator that he used to be at 36, 37 years old. But when Jimmy is there, you look at the numbers, and Jimmy is there, they score like 116 points per 100. You're like, okay, well, that's an excellent number. And you watch the eye test, and you're like, my goodness, this guy has just become the type of player where he can create a good shot for anybody. He's become such a fabulous passer, and he's basically their point guard when he is on the floor on the offensive side. And so if Jimmy is there, I have faith that they're just going to keep climbing. But if he ends up playing only 52 games, then it gets dicey.
Yeah, I worry about Kyle Lowry. They're just playing him so much.
Ooh, yeah, so many minutes.
I don't know what to think about that. He's currently played the 13th most minutes in the NBA, and he's played less games than everybody else who's above him right now. So I worry about that with Kyle. I do. The one thing that I really do love is they found Caleb Martin, and they're like, yeah, this guy's a really good player. And he's like impacting like every lineup positively. He's like a plus 7.6 on the season for them. Their three best lineups all include Caleb Martin. Like they just continue to kind of find these guys and recycle them. Like Max Strus has been that guy. Duncan Robinson has been that guy. Kind of like the new Max Strus, Duncan Robinson. Not that Strus isn't good. Like Strus is still playing some good minutes for them. But Caleb Martin's been pretty awesome for them on the wing. Tyler Hero has started to get it together too. Like he's been scoring like crazy lately. Put up a career high 35 in Oklahoma City, then followed it up the next night against the Rockets with 42. Like you can start to see him kind of getting into a groove a little bit. I think this Heat team will be there at the end of the day. And you got Jimmy, you got Bam, you got Tyler Hero. Then you can kind of fill in with these guys as long as they don't kill Kyle Lowry. I think that they're going to be dangerous come playoff time and a lot better than 20th in net rating. I think this is closer to what the Knicks are at 10th is what I guess they'd be. I just think that it's the math is more of a result of just the up and down nature of this Heat team more than anything.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Can I ask you a question? Speaking of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel about the fact that Kevin Durant is literally playing more minutes than anyone in the NBA right now? Like literally leads the NBA in minutes after an Achilles tear, which was followed by years of like, okay, we're going to take your entire time with you and you are going to rest when you need to rest. And he's had injuries flare up since. Like it hasn't just been like a one-time thing with the Achilles. He's gotten hurt and he's leading the league in minutes. And look, Brooklyn is rolling right now. They're playing great basketball. They're playing great, but I just keep looking at that. I'm like, that number is expanding and expanding, and it just makes me a little queasy.
Yeah, they're on our list too. They're ninth in net rating at a plus 1.8. The same, the two teams in New York both have plus 1.8 net ratings right now. As far as the minutes go, it's concerning, definitely. 7-footer that plays really hard every single night. Like he's got to defend. He's got to be their best defender on most nights. He's got to be their best scorer on most nights. And he's not immortal. He's 34 years old. You look at the other guys that are playing. I mean, there's been several guys that have played 1,000-plus minutes this season. Jeremy Grant is 28. Jordan Clarkson, who's 30. Anthony Simons, 23. Lowry, as we mentioned. Julius Randle, who's still only 28. I feel like people think Randle's a lot older than he is. It's probably just because of all the all the ice bags that he wears in between timeouts and stuff. DeRozan is 33. He's played a ton of minutes too. RJ Barrett, 22. Royce O'Neal, also for the Nets, 29. Franz Wagner, 21. Like all these guys are in their 20s. Kuzma's in his 20s. Mobley, Jason Tatum, Edwards, Mikal Bridges, and Durant. There's only three guys that have played 1,000 minutes so far this season that are above 30. And it's Kyle Lowry, and it's Kevin Durant, and DeMar DeRozan. It's those three. And they have to carry a lot. The Lowry one feels even weirder now, honestly.
Yeah, you're
Lowry's
right.
not carrying his team like Durant or DeMar. Like that, it
but Lowry's had moments where he has had to carry them, because like there was a period where like Bam was out and Jimmy was out, and
sure.
And Lowry, like, there was a game where he was out and Lowry played, like, they went to overtime. I think Lowry played what, like 49 minutes or something like that. The Heat were missing like their whole roster.
It's insane. I mean, I put carry the team in quotes. Like, you got to air quote the carry the team thing with Lowry, because like what Kevin's doing. I mean, Kevin deserves MVP consideration for what he's doing. And my only concern is just his health. Like, that's my only concern with Kevin and all of this. He's actually been a joy to watch this year. And I know that Nets team has been an absolute mess. But over the last, like, 3 weeks, like, they're just playing basketball. And it's just really good to see. It's good to see a guy of Kevin's talent just get to focus on basketball and play well. But yeah, it's concerning. But I think any team with Kevin Durant and any talent around him, like, is going to be a top 10 team in net rating, which they are. I kind of believe in this team. I think they could be kind of scary come playoff time, because you just need guys that get buckets. Like, if you can compete hard enough defensively, they're going to have a ceiling that's lower than almost everybody else, and that's understandable. I think it's going to be hard for them to win two rounds in the Eastern Conference just because they can't play defense. But you have Kevin and Kyrie, who are just mid-range assassins this year. They're two of the best guys in the mid-range. I think they're going to have a chance, but yeah, I'm concerned. He's played 1,100 minutes, most in the NBA, but he's still 56, 36, 92 shooting splits on the season, playing an insane amount of minutes. Seems to be having fun again, which I think is good for Kevin. You know, a lot of the last few years have not been fun in Brooklyn. But yeah, I would say definitely concerning just because of the age stuff.
Totally. I mean, look, last year he was playing about the same amount of minutes a game, but they were, you know, he was hurt for a little bit. They were sitting him out every once in a while. He was resting. Like, now it's just like, look, maybe he's just this great and he's fine. And I covered Bradley Beal when he played 82 games in a season once. I covered Bradley Beal when he led the league in minutes 1 year, and that was on a team that was really, really bad. And Scott Brooks kind of changed the way. Scott Brooks was the head coach of that team. He kind of changed the way that I felt about minutes throughout that season, because I would ask him a lot about Beal playing so many minutes on a team that wasn't going anywhere, and why is it necessary? And Scott would make the point of people on the outside care so much about minutes total because it's all we're seeing on the outside. So if a guy plays 32 minutes, we're like, okay, he got an extra 5 minutes of rest compared to a guy who plays 37. But you might be playing your star 32 minutes a game, and on the outside, people might be saying that guy is getting rest and not really playing, but then you're running his ass out of the gym in practice, and he's going nuts in practice having to do stuff. And Scott's whole thought was, Brad is playing 37 minutes a game, but he's sitting every single practice. I'm not working him like crazy outside of the game. So what's it matter if he plays three more minutes? If you were playing 34 minutes and I were killing him in practice, you wouldn't be asking me a thing. You'd be talking about how I was being conservative with Bradley Beal. So I was like, I always thought, you know what? You convinced me. That is a completely fair. Yeah. You know why? He was right. He was right. And once he answered it and talked about, like, no, I'm resting him in practices. He's not really practicing. He's not going through any physical stuff in practice because we want to use him more in games because he is the engine of this team. So we want him to play as many minutes as possible. We came up with a strategy of, okay, how can we responsibly play him as many minutes as possible? What can we take off the table? And we took all of these other things off the table so that his overall workload actually isn't changed compared to if he were playing 34. I'm like, okay, That is totally reasonable. That's a thoughtful response. You win this round, Mr. Brooks. You are absolutely correct. I will stop, asking critical questions about it. At least I will stop thinking so critically about it and start being more open-minded about it. So I would bet, and I don't know this, but I would bet the Nets are doing a similar type of thing with Durant, but it's still hard to see. You know, Beal at the time was like a healthy, like 25-year-old. And it's, right. It's still hard to see Durant with his medical history and him being 34 years of age. And just like, you're right. He's been such a joy to watch this year. And his passing has been off the charts too. I know the assists are like,
it's been unbelievable.
The assists are normal for him. His passing has been off the charts. It's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
The way he's creating threes for other guys is insane. He just makes the right play every single time. I maintain that Kevin Durant is the least flawed player in NBA history. Maybe not the best, but he's the least flawed player in NBA history. Dude just has no deficiencies at all. No holes in his game. And I'm with you. He's been a joy to watch. My only thing is just like, he's had some health problems in the past, and I hope they don't flare up. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, I think for Brooklyn, it's just about getting everybody healthy at the same time. Like, can you get everybody on the court at the same time? And maybe you're okay. I think they could use another big. I like Nick Claxton and what he's been able to do. He's been really good in the pick and roll. I just don't know that he can hold up physically as a defender. You know, Markieff Morris has also played really well.
They're a good Jakob Poeltl team.
It'd be great. I mean, we got to get that one mention of Jakob Poeltl in the pod, and they are a good Jakob Poeltl team.
I didn't even do that one intentionally. They're salary matching stuff.
They need somebody like that.
Yeah, salary matching stuff comes a little weird there because they have a weird cap sheet, so you have to do some weird stuff to make sure that you're sending out the right amount. But you can make it work. Like you could do a.
Yeah.
You could do a Poeltl deal. That he would make sense for them. He's more physical. You look at the other teams in the East, and they're actually all very well positioned defensively to guard Joel Embiid in the playoff series. You know, Boston has Al Horford, who's great against Embiid and has guarded him
amazing.
And played. Like literally so good at guarding Joel Embiid that the 76ers signed him so that he would stop guarding Joel Embiid.
So he
in the
wouldn't
playoffs.
Be there. Yeah, yeah.
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 Like
yeah.
That's how good he is at that. And you have Milwaukee who's got Brooke Lopez and Giannis down low, and you've got Cleveland who's got Jared Allen and Evan Mobley down low. And it's like those mm-hmm. are, you know, Mobley is not going to be a great one-on-one defender of Embiid, but if Embiid does have a little bit of a weakness to his game, it's that you can kind of surprise him with double teams. And if you can have Mobley stray a little bit and you can have some creative doubles, I'm sure. And Bickerstaff does a good job of that kind of stuff too. He's very creative with his defensive scheming. Like they're a team that's well equipped to guard, you know, not well equipped to guard Embiid because nobody is, but they have the personnel that if you're going against Joel Embiid, you can be like, okay, we got a chance here. We got a shot to make him uncomfortable. And Brooklyn doesn't have that. Like if they have to face Philly or something in like a 4-5, which I think would be the 4-5 right now, right? If they have to place like Philly in a 4-5 matchup, like I could see just like Embiid doing to them just what like Shaq did to the Nets during that NBA Finals one year when he was just like 35-17 for the whole series.
You know, as they say, they're a Poeltl away from being competitive in a playoff series. let's take a quick break, and after that, we're going to talk about a couple more teams. We'll be right back. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started. And we're back from that quick break. Which way you want to go? You want to talk good team or bad team?
Can we talk about the Raptors?
Ooh, that's what I was about to go to.
Because what you know in the why world do we do with
this Raptors team?
You know why I thought of them? Because you said good team or bad team, and I didn't know which way to categorize the Raptors.
this Raps team is struggling. Lost again tonight as we speak to the 76ers that we talked about earlier. They've lost six in a row to the Magic, Kings, Nets, Warriors without Steph, and to the Sixers in overtime. They play the red-hot Knicks next. I just don't know what you do. They're not as in dire straits as the Wizards, because you look at the Wizards and you're like, man, I just don't know. Like, even if they picked a direction, like, is it really going to work? I don't know. You know, with the Raptors, I think that they could pick several different directions to go. That would be fine. They could even just ride this year out and just see what happens, and that's probably a fine thing to do with some of their young guys. But you just kind of wonder long-term what they can be. You know, if I'm Masai Ujiri, I'd be very tempted to hit the reset button and just say, Scotty, OG, we're going to ride with you guys and try to figure this out. What do you think?
So, Andrew, this is the net rating game. So,
yeah,
we didn't read this off, but the Raptors coming into tonight, they were 13-16. They literally just lost to the 76ers, so I don't think the numbers have updated. But coming into tonight, their net rating was actually plus 0.2. They were just a hair better than mediocre. A hair better.
Yeah.
But 13-16.
Still about there.
Right. I mean, yeah, they lost by 3 to Philly.
Just by a couple points.
They're probably right around a net even net rating.
Yeah.
And they're 13-17, which means they're pretty nicely underplaying their net rating. Which means you could look at them and be like, all right, they've lost some close games. They lost another close one tonight. Siakam was hurt for a little while. They've you know, had been the unfortunate fortune of bad luck. All right, keep this going and let it run out. But when I see that profile, I see a Toronto Raptors team vastly underplaying its net rating. It just makes me think of another team, the 2021 Toronto Raptors, who at this point of that season, we were saying, you know, the Raptors are really underplaying their net weighting. I can't wait for them to turn it around. That team started off 17-17. It was vastly underplaying its net rating. We were like, either the Raptors, they'll turn it around. We know they'll turn it around. And then they lost like a million games in a row. And then they got
the plug.
And then they decided, well, they kind of pseudo pulled the plug, right? That was when they traded Norm Powell for Gary Trent. And they kind of pseudo pulled the plug. They were like, we're going to make a trade that's about next year, and then they'll re-sign Gary Trent, right? And
yeah.
And
it's a good trade, by the way.
Yeah, it was a good trade. You're right. That was a good deal. I just wonder if we're going to see them operate similarly this year, because the profile kind of says the same thing. And a lot of people look at a lot of people who are smart people look at that and say, okay, well, net rating is kind of indicative of how you're playing, sometimes even more than record. And the net rating says that they're a lot better than their record. So you can reasonably believe that they're a lot better than their record, especially considering that Siakam is having an excellent season. Had another huge game against the Sixers tonight, by the way. Had what, do you have 38 tonight? Yep. And has vastly improved as a playmaker. Like, vastly. He is so much better of a playmaker than he's ever been. If he makes All-NBA, by the way, he's going to be Supermax eligible. And that is going to be a very interesting conversation to have. But you could reasonably convince yourself, very reasonably and very intelligently convince yourself, okay, the Raptors are 13-17, but they're actually much better than 13-17. And by the way, I thought they were going to be... I, along with the rest of basketball Twitter, thought they were going to be really good coming into this year.
Yeah.
But this front office has looked at a team with a profile like this before and thought, nah, kick them next year. Kick the can down the road. Mm-hmm. Do something for next year. And that, by the way, was when the bottom fell out from under them intentionally. They let it go in the second half of the season, and they ended up getting the Scotty Barnes pick. And that's how they got Scotty Barnes. So worked out well from that time.
Yeah.
So I could, I'm with you. I could see, I think there are a lot of things that are on the table. Like, I don't know which way they're going to go. I really have absolutely no idea. But I think anything from, nah, we're much better than this record indicates, so we're going to add a piece. I think that's in play. I think, oh, nervous about Siakam's upcoming contract stuff, and this team is underwhelming. Let's tear everything down except for Scotty Barnes, who's untouchable. I think that's maybe in play. I don't think it's in play if they stay where they are now, but if they implode, then maybe. I think them just kind of doing what they did a couple of years ago, like the equivalent of that Gary Trent trade, I think that's in play. Like, maybe they just stand pat too. I don't know what they end up choosing to do. I don't know, but there are a million different ways this could go. It's a very interesting team building situation.
A lot of this is the shooting. They're 27th in 3-point shooting this year. And you look at what Fred VanVleet has done so far this season. He's shooting 33% on 8 attempts. You know, he's a career 37% 3-point shooter. Like, you gotta believe that's gonna turn around. Like, they're not some like elite shooting team, but they're more like middle of the pack shooting team. They're not the bottom of the barrel shooting team. Like, that to me is the thing. They're 28th, they're not 27th, they're 28th. The only teams that are shooting worse than them are the Los Angeles Lakers, who we know are just a terrible shooting team, and the Charlotte Hornets, who just barely have enough NBA players. Like, those are the only two teams. You got teams like the Rockets and Spurs and Thunder who are shooting quite a bit better than them. Who are just like, they're all saying like, yeah, we're not even ready to get it together yet. Like, if we don't shoot well, totally fine. Totally fine with us. I just have to believe the Raptors are going to shoot better than this. And so that to me is one of the things that I just wonder. If that turns around, does that 3-point loss turn into a win? Because tonight, they shot so poorly again. They're 11 for 40 from 3 tonight and still had a chance to win the game.
The question for them, Andrew.
They're just mediocre. Yeah.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I just said if they're just mediocre, they win that game because they're competing and playing well in almost every other facet of the game. They're just not shooting well. And so if that happens, if like they start to turn... And sometimes those things can snowball with teams where you just start to shoot the ball better. And so that to me, like that's the biggest question for me with this Raptors team and why their net rating, I think, might be actually indicative of who they are as like kind of a more middle of the pack team.
Yeah, I mean, getting at it, the question for them, and this was the huge question for them last year when they were good and competitive and were a legit playoff team and got really hot in the second half of the season, which, by the way, maybe that convinces them of something moving forward, right? Like maybe they just... Mm-hmm. They feel like they got hot last year. They can get hot again this year at the end of the year. But even then, the question about them was their half-court offense. Like, that defense was swarming and long and everything that you would want in a defense, right? And they were really good in transition, and they could get out running, and Scotty Barnes could dunk on guys. And, you know, I just talked about Siakam's, you know, playmaking, taking a huge jump, and that's certainly true. But their half-court offense is just a droll again. Like, they struggle to get into stuff. VanVleet not shooting well is really, really hurting them. He's also, it's not just the three-point shooting. He's always been a guy who the three needs to work because he's not an inside-the-arc kind of player. Like, it's not like he's, like, getting to the paint and creating a lot from the paint in that sort of way. And so it's really been a problem for them where like they rely a lot on getting turnovers, getting out of the break and having to score on the break, right? Like that's just their identity and what they need to do. And they're getting those turnovers. They are. They're I think they force more turnovers than any other defense in the league right now, as they should. That's how they're constructed to do. But, you know, Clean the Glass right now has them. They're averaging 90 points per 100 possessions in the half court. Second to last in the NBA. Like, they are just a chore to watch once they get into the half court, even with the leap from Siakam. And it's really a problem, because this might really affect them, because even if, let's say, they go on a run and they end up winning 48 games and they get into the playoffs as a 4 or 5 seed or something, and they play great second half of the year, that's still going to be an issue. And how are you going to win in the playoffs when your half court offense is bottom 5 consistently every year? It's just, there's something with this group that is preventing them from being able to get there. You're not going to win enough playoff games for it to really matter. So I wonder how much that's going to play into the front office's decision making as well.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think they're pretty fascinating, because they are one of the most well-run teams in the league, and you can trust whatever direction they pick. And if they do say, like, hey, yeah, we're struggling, let's pull back. Let's be involved in the 2023 draft. I think it's a very smart decision. There's a lot of really, really good players in this next draft. And if they could find a way to sneak in a top 5 pick onto this team, there are just a lot of guys in this next draft that could really help. It's not just Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson. I mean, Amen Thompson is like totally a Raptor. And he would also struggle with the shooting thing. But just like, go with me. Like, he's totally a Raptor. And I think he would be awesome for them. Brandon Miller could help with their shooting. He's a big, rangy guy that can really shoot from deep, can kind of relocate. I think he'd be awesome for them. Cam Whitmore would be amazing for them. Like, there are guys in this draft. This draft is pretty deep that could play. Anthony Black, he would fit with the Raptors so well. 6'7", kind of combo-y forward guard that can kind of do a ton of stuff. Plays for Arkansas, that is pretty amazing. There are a lot of guys in this draft that, if I'm Masai Ujiri and I feel uninspired by this team, you feel like you could go get a Scotty Barnes caliber of player within like the top 6 or 7 picks. Like, yeah, pull back. Because there are teams that you thought would be like fully invested in this draft process that just aren't. Like Utah, like you thought that they would be a part of this. Like, from the Raptors, I'm taking advantage of Utah not being there. It's like, well, we'll slide into Utah's spot. Yep, that'd be good. And yeah, you look around the East, I don't know. Like, if I'm the Raptors, I would try to keep this group together and just add another pick to it.
Pacers too. Pacers are much better.
Indy, yeah.
Pacers are much better. I mean,
Indy's a lot better.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see. Like, I wonder if the Wizards end up joining that group. I'm so curious to know what's going to happen with the Bulls.
Yeah,
because the Bulls owe their first round pick to Orlando, but it's top 4 protected, so maybe they just try to tank really, really hard and hope to end up in the top 4. Like, yeah, it's possible. I don't
know.
That
could be so disastrous and so great for the Magic. Because, like, right now, if things just landed like they were, they get picks 5 and 7.
Yeah.
I mean, that is incredibly – it's just, like, the disaster that is the Bulls is even – like, that's even worse, man. That is
– all of a sudden, by the way, the Magic are going to have one of the most exciting young teams in the league if that's how this plays out. Like, Banchero is really good.
Oh.
And Wagner is really good.
Wagner's great.
Wendell Carter Jr. is sneakily really good too, by the way. No one's talking about the season that he's having, but he has been really good for them. And, you know, everyone says that
they're an elite guard away from, like, actually competing.
They're not an elite guard away. They're just a guard away, because everyone on their team is 6'11 or taller. They're just going to get rid of the idea of guards. They're just like, we're going to play Banchero, and we're going to play Wagner, and we're going to play Carter, and we're going to play Bol Bol. And when Jonathan Isaac's back, he can play there too. and Mo Bamba can be the sixth man. And that'll be the whole that'll be the whole roster. There's no guards. They just got Markel Fultz can be there for solidarity's sake. He can be the honorary guard. Comes in when it's a huge blowout.
Fultz has actually been kind of good for them.
Yeah.
He's been helpful to them since he's been back.
Yeah, because he's literally the only guard. It's him and Cole Anthony are the only two guards on the team. And Bol Bol just plays guard. I mean, I was so excited about Mike Vorkunov's article about Bol Bol. I was so excited about the headline about everyone says Victor Wembanyama is something we haven't seen before. Well, watch the Orlando Magic, friends. Because Bol Bol is doing something insane every night.
It's definitely a joke. But also, if you are somehow able to go watch Bol in person, go do it. Because it's honestly, I've been to a bunch of games this year. He has been easily a top three moment. Like a top three in-person moment for me this year was seeing Bol Bol. Because he will do some of the most wild stuff and kind of fly around, come out of nowhere with dunks and bringing the ball up. Just watching him bring the ball up the court, if you're able to sit close, is just like, what is this? Is this still the sport of basketball? It's the most entertaining thing. Seriously, you got to go watch Bol. And if he's just the precursor to Wembanyama, and Wembanyama is just this mega force, which everybody thinks that he'll be, it's great. Just go soak it up now. Go soak up a little bit of Bol. Get yourself ready for Wembanyama next year.
A little bit of Bol. Just one Bol. And then
one Bol.
So like one Bol.
Second Bol next year. Yeah,
exactly.
Second Bol next year.
Exactly.
Well, next week we won't have an episode of Tampering. So you guys enjoy Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever you're celebrating. Hopefully you guys will enjoy that, enjoy the holiday season. We will have a special episode of the Athletic NBA Show drop on Friday. It is the Athletic NBA Show special that will include lots and lots of characters from around the Athletic. It'll be a very, very fun time, so be sure to listen to that. Enjoy your time with friends and family, and we will talk to you guys again in a couple weeks.